It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Farah. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up later, we head to Washington for the latest on the trade deal that's causing a rift between the president and Democrats in Congress.
First, it's been a busy week so far in Wisconsin politics. The state's budget committee met yesterday to make tweaks to Governor Walker's proposed state budget, including funding for Wisconsin Public Broadcasting.
And today, the assembly was in session to consider some proposals. Meanwhile, the Wisconsin Supreme Court released hundreds of pages from the ongoing John Doe investigation to the public.
Here with us now to discuss all the latest news from under the Capitol Dome is Sean Johnson, WPR State Government Reporter. Sean, as always, thanks a lot for being here.
You're welcome.
Well, let's start with today's action in the Assembly. Lawmakers are looking at a few things, starting with bills that affect public benefits recipients. What's been on the table there?
Yeah, there's a few that are sure to spark some contentious debate here. You could, I guess, start with the one that involves food share or basically specifies that people can only spend a certain percentage of their food share benefits or their food stamp benefits on junk food. So it's restricting what they can purchase. You know, the idea behind this, sponsors say, is that this will encourage healthy eating, that if the state's going to, or it's not the state in this case, but if the government is going to offer a public benefit like this, that it should be able to ask for certain restrictions on that, that we have a stake in healthy eating. But critics are saying it's all about demonizing poor people, and that in this case it actually comes at a pretty big cost to the state. It would be pretty pricey to implement this.
Right. Word is, whether or not this passed, it would not be implemented because the cost is prohibitive right now.
The cost is pretty high, and I think the other contention you're going to hear made about this bill is that it's not real. You know, essentially, you're going to need federal approval to do something like this. They're going to have to grant the state of Wisconsin a waiver because this is a federal program. States have to run it basically the same everywhere. If they don't, they need to get an exception from the federal government. And the federal government, the Obama administration, is not going to grant an exception for this, Democrats say.
And the Assembly is also taking up a bill that will put a one-year hold on using a new state test. It's called the Badger Exam. Why has this test come under fire recently?
There's been a lot of back and forth over testing in the state, and this is something that the costs of the test have gotten much higher than initially projected. I think there are going to be a lot of people that are concerned that the results from this test are going to show that a lot of Wisconsin schools are not performing as well as they'd hoped. But really, it's just because of the number of schools that are opting out of it nationwide and what this is doing to the cost of the test, this is not going to be the cost going forward. So the legislature is going to put a hold on using it to evaluate schools and teachers publicly as part of a report card.
Any idea how long a hold that will be?
I am not sure what happens next with this. It's a pretty complicated area, the testing of our schools.
Well, moving on to the latest news on the budget, the Joint Finance Committee met yesterday, taking up some of Governor Walker's budget proposals, including cuts to public broadcasting. What did the committee have to say yesterday?
Yeah, public broadcasting, which obviously affects you and me, was kind of the big item on the agenda yesterday. The governor proposed cutting the Educational Communications Board, which helps deliver Wisconsin public radio and television programming throughout the state, by $5 million in his budget. And the budget committee, Republicans on the budget committee, proposed and passed a motion that would reduce that cut by about half. So instead of a $5 million cut to ECB's state funding, it would see about a $2.4 million cut. And it would specifically carve out that there would be money set aside for engineering positions, and I think the hope among Republicans is that would make sure that the state's Amber Alert system, which ECB operates, would be held intact.
We're talking right now with WPR State Capitol reporter Sean Johnson about a lot of news, including the latest from the budget and some movement in the Senate and the Assembly. And other tweaks yesterday, Sean, to Governor Walker's budget. What else came up?
Yeah, I mean, I think smaller stuff at this point. You saw they made some changes to what the governor wanted to do with consolidation of some mental health programs. I would say they delayed some decisions about the university. A lot of the big decisions are yet to come on a lot of UW stuff. And so a decision on what to do with the reciprocity agreement that we have between Wisconsin and Minnesota, that was put off. And so you had this debate over public broadcasting funding that was kind of first and foremost. Republicans that decided to keep the funding intact said that state funding needs to be reduced, but this is a valuable public service. Democrats tried unsuccessfully to restore all of the funding, and they ultimately voted against the plan that Republicans passed.
Sounds like there was also some discussion yesterday about funding for programs that deal with water pollution and runoff to waterways. What did the JFC have to say there?
Basically, what they said is that there would be less of a cut than the governor proposed for these programs. And so, this is a situation where I think some of the environmental groups kind of looking at the political realities of the budget in front of them were kind of happy with what they got.
And on Thursday, the Budget Committee is scheduled to vote on the governor's plan to cut property taxes. Now what's at stake there?
This is a piece of the budget that could be used to kind of backfill the cut to education in the budget that Republicans have said they want to erase. So there's this school levy property tax credit that gets a couple payments made to it in the second year of the budget. If they delay one of those payments until after the next budget, it kind of frees up this money that they can move around and use it to pay for something else. So that's on the agenda, although given that it's kind of one of those big decisions that's going to affect how schools get paid for in this budget, might be another one of those that they put off. But the governor says he wants to continue to reduce property taxes in his budget. But the budget, as he has it now, before the legislature, only cuts property taxes by about $11 over 2 years. And so, I think there'll be a lot of discussion over whether or not that's worth the trade-off, that if you're going to cut public schools, is it really worth it to have a property tax cut that most people won't really notice?
And finally, Sean, the state Supreme Court just released another batch of documents relating to the John Doe case. Do we have a sense yet, I guess, first of all, why now and whether there might be anything new in the documents?
Yeah, there is a lot in these documents to digest, and a lot of the documents are redacted, so if you're looking for specific names, you're not going to find them in these documents. You'll see entire pages that are basically just blacked out. Trying to find exactly what is new in here is kind of tricky, but there are big issues that are discussed in these documents. These legal filings for the cases connected to this John Doe investigation. Some of the big picture issues are, should all of the justices be able to sit on this case, given that a couple of them have benefited from campaign contributions or campaign help by some of the groups that are being investigated? And then I guess the broader question is, does the state of Wisconsin's prohibit coordination between candidates, campaigns, and supposedly independent interest groups? And, if so, where do you draw that line? And was that line crossed between Governor Walker's campaign in the recall and a number of conservative groups that all kind of rallied to his cause in 2012? I mean, those are the big picture questions here. And trying to find new developments within these documents, of which there are many, is kind of an ongoing process here. We won't hear arguments in this case, though, so document dumps like this are kind of the public's only view into what's happening.
Sean, thanks a lot for joining us.
You're welcome.
That was Sean Johnson, WPR state government reporter. He joined us to bring us up to speed on what the Joint Finance Committee and the State Assembly have been up to. President Obama was at odds with his own party in Congress yesterday after Senate Democrats voted to block consideration of an Asian trade bill that's a priority for the president. That roadblock now appears to have been resolved.
Also on the Hill, the days are numbered for lawmakers to come to an agreement over NSA bulk collection of phone data. Those provisions in the Patriot Act are set to expire on June 1st. Harry Enten is with us. He's senior political writer and analyst for 538 for our weekly look at the latest in national politics. Harry, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So usually when we think president versus Congress, we're thinking president versus Republicans in Congress. Yesterday, pushback from his fellow Democrats. Why this falling out over this Trans-Pacific partnership?
Well, this is sort of a classic example of, I think, you know, a second-term president and after the second midterm where he has his own priorities. And, of course, the Congress is a diverse body with liberal members, moderate members, even conservative Democrats. And they just see it differently, and they recognize what their own constituents want. And what you are dealing with in this situation is you see these Democrats who are trying to get as much out of this trade deal as possible, as much protection for, you know, workers in the United States. And they basically are playing legislation. They know that they can get as much out of Republicans as possible. And so what they're simply doing here is, as the news report hinted at, they're going to pass this. It's just a matter of how long it's going to take and what provisions they can get to try and get as much out of Republicans as possible. So this isn't a matter of all or nothing. It's just a matter of how much protection do we get to ensure that workers here in the United States aren't going to get, you know, worked over too hard.
And the worry from the president and the people in Congress who want this deal is that they might go an amendment too far. They might try to include something that's going to scotch the whole deal.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's exactly right. You know, you're trying to balance things in these situations, and Obama clearly wants to get a bill passed, and he's been working with Republicans very hard, because remember, Republicans control the Senate, and that's who he thought he had to work most with. But keep in mind, you know, you still need 60 votes for cloture in the United States Senate, and so what Democrats are able to do is they can team up with one another, and they have more than enough seats to keep things from going too fast. And at the same time, you have these Republicans like Rand Paul, who are going to be looking out for workers and trying to ensure, you're not going to give too much away in such a deal. And it seems like they're working things out. So we should get a bill passed sooner rather than later.
And we mentioned this is a priority for the White House, for President Obama. Why is the president putting so many chips on the table for this trade deal?
Well, this is just one of the things that he's been looking at, and it's been part of his economic agenda. It's one of those things that he believes is going to move the economy forward, and so he's put a lot of effort on it. And it seems that that type of effort is going to pay off. The members of his party recognize this, and they're not trying to, you know, screw him over. They're just trying to ensure that their own constituents don't get screwed over.
And you mentioned Rand Paul. He and others in the Senate looking at 2016 presidential runs. How is this deal shaping up when it comes to the potential 2016 candidates?
This is a very interesting thing that's going on here, because normally, at least the way that I think most people think about it, is Republicans are the ones who want, you know, economic freedom. They want the least provisions as possible. But what we're dealing with now in the Republican Party is we have a certain strain of it, this more populist strain that are these non-college-educated white voters who look at these foreign trade deals, especially something that's being pushed by President Obama. Anything that a Democratic president is going to push is going to make Republican voters sort of step back and say, wait a minute, what's going on here? And so what you see is a number of Republicans, Rand Paul, Mike Huckabee, Ben Carson, Carly Fiorina, who are all saying, you know what, I'm not necessarily sure I trust this deal. And so you're having a division not only within the Democratic Party, but you're having this division within the Republican Party in the primary, where we're seeing different politicians try to play to different constituency groups to try and find that 15 or 20% that's going to be needed to win in Iowa and New Hampshire.
A former senator in the presidential race, Hillary Clinton, is she in an awkward position on this issue?
Yeah, I mean, look, Hillary Clinton, unless something ridiculous happens, is going to win the Democratic primary. But she wants to avoid getting bloodied in the Democratic primary. And this is part of the reason why most people don't really know where Clinton stands on this issue at this point, because she hasn't said a lot. And the reason she hasn't said a lot is I think she wants to see where it develops, and there's no real rush for her. But the last thing she wants to do is come out and say something that's going to upset the Democratic base. If you look at where the Senate debate has headed, it's clearly in a direction that wants to push back, that doesn't want to rush this too much. And so Clinton is saying, you know what, I don't want to give some room on my left to either a Bernie Sanders or a Martin O'Malley. So instead of rushing it, she's going to hold back and wait. And I'm sure she's going to formulate some answer that the polling tells her is correct. But at this point, we don't know exactly where she stands.
We're checking out the latest news from national politics with Harry Enten, senior political writer for 538. Moving on to another big issue in Congress, some Patriot Act measures expiring at the beginning of the next month, including the ones that, at least the executive branch says, allow NSA collection of bulk phone data. Does this look like a deadline Congress is likely to meet?
I think that they'll probably, make these deadlines. I mean, these are deadlines that are set up. We've seen this a lot over the past few years where we set up these deadlines and then it looks like it's not going to get anywhere, and then they're able to pass some sort of compromise at the last minute. I mean, if the president believes that this is an important thing, he'll be able to get enough members of his party along with enough hawks in the Republican Party to go along with him. What we've seen time in and time out is you are seeing these Tea Party Republicans teaming up with these very liberal Democrats to form this sort of anti-NSA coalition. But that anti-NSA coalition has not been enough to really keep, what the president would argue are necessary security in place. And it hasn't kept them from passing those pieces of legislation. So my guess is they will pass it, but what we're going to see again is this very interesting sort of coalition that we're sort of seeing on the trade deal as well, where you're seeing these very conservative Republicans teaming up with these liberal Democrats, while the more moderate members of each party, the more mainstream members of each party, form together and are able to pass a piece of legislation.
It's interesting, and maybe this is just my perception. It seems like for a long time we saw a lot of party line votes on things or close to, and now we're seeing, as you say, this moderates on both sides versus the right or left wings of their own parties.
Yeah, this is something that's sort of developed where you're getting what I would almost call an insider-outsider coalition thing that's going on here. People who would be thought of as the establishment, the mainstream. And we see these on issues that we don't necessarily think of make or breaks for either party. If we were talking about abortion or gay rights, those tend to fall along party lines. But when we're talking about trade, when we're talking about security, these are things where each party has different coalitions that haven't yet split apart and become one party issue or another party issue. And it sort of harkens back to the old days where you could have conservative Democrats teaming up with conservative Republicans to form something, or liberal Democrats forming up with liberal Republicans. It's not quite like that as it was, 40, 50 years ago, but it is something whereby at least we're getting some bipartisan coalition going on in Washington, and isn't that nice?
Well, another issue where that can happen is foreign policy, and that's been on the table in the presidential race. So Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker in Israel this week, likely hoping to boost his foreign policy credentials. And it's been an issue for other candidates, too. I want to start with Jeb Bush commenting on the Iraq war. He said on Fox News that knowing what we know now, would he have gone to war, he was asked. He said yes. Then he said, I misheard the question. Maybe, I don't know. What happened there, and how does that affect his candidacy?
I think that this is a case where he wants to stand up for his brother and just doesn't know what to say. Because, I mean, for better or worse, the Iraq War is a George W. Bush legacy. And Jeb recognizes that, and he doesn't want to, say bad things about his brother. The political answer in this situation is, knowing that we know now, we don't want to go into Iraq. And we saw, even Ted Cruz, who is arguably the most conservative Republican in the race, say that. And Jeb just can't seem to quite put the words together to say it. He knows that that's what should be said, but each time it comes up, he just can't figure out. He's been asked three times this question now, and even on the third try today in Nevada, he just couldn't do it. He just couldn't do it. And it's one of those things where he'll have enough time to formulate an answer going forward. The first debate isn't until August, and most people aren't paying attention to the political scene right now. But that answer, as he's given it right now, where he says, I don't want to talk about hypotheticals, which is, I think, what he said today, or knowing what I know now, I would go. those types of answers are just not going to hold up under scrutiny. So he better formulate a new answer. Otherwise, it's not going to be good for him.
Jeb Bush, a former governor, not a lot of votes on foreign policy. Same with current Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. Do these national or international trips, like to Israel, as Governor Walker is doing now, does that make a difference in his real or his perceived foreign policy standing as we wrap up?
I mean, it can help. I mean, Ronald Reagan didn't have much foreign policy experience heading into 1976 or 1980, but, you know, he came out with a list of policy positions and assured the public that he knew what he was talking about. Walker has some work to do. Foreign policy is, according to at least one poll, is the number one issue among Republican primary voters this year. It's much different than 4 years ago. So Walker, as a governor who doesn't have much foreign policy experience, has to prove to voters that he's bulked up and that he'll say things that makes sense. I mean, look, you can visit 100 countries in the world, but if you can't talk about foreign policy, forget about it. So the key thing for Walker here is to get educated so that when the first questions come, he gives factual answers that make sense and assure voters that he knows what he's talking about.
Harry, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. We look at the latest in national politics every week at this time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Parrott.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. So when was the last time you went somewhere by yourself? Maybe a movie or a concert, maybe even a party. And how did you feel about it? Or could you really not talk yourself into going in the first place?
For many of us, the thought of going to a public place or event by ourselves causes anxiety, maybe even fear, probably because we're worried about how the people around, the ones out with their friends, would look at us, think of us. But a new study suggests that maybe those fears are misguided and we might be missing out on some good times because of it.
Jesse Singel joins us now. He's the editor of the Science of Us blog at New York Magazine, where he recently wrote a piece called Why You Should Go to the Movies and Do Other Stuff Alone. Jesse, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So let's start with your personal story. When you are confronted with that decision about whether or not to go someplace all by yourself or just stay home, what do you do?
I think, like everyone, I have a pretty idiosyncratic set of rules. I'm fine going to a restaurant or a coffee shop alone, except on a Friday or Saturday night. I have never been able to bring myself to go to a movie alone, and that's like a weird mini goal of mine over the next few months is to work up the courage.
So what is it about that, both from your experience and the research you looked at in the piece you wrote, what is it that makes that movie or whatever, the party, the line we won't cross in terms of going places alone?
Yeah, what stuck out at me about the study was it confirmed my feelings, which are that if you go and do something like see a movie alone, everyone else around you is going to assume you're there because you don't have any friends, you didn't have anyone to go with, which when you think about it, it is a little bit irrational, but I think that's a very real fear for a lot of people.
So let's talk about this new study that came out, tried to measure which activities people were kind of okay doing alone. Like you said, maybe going to a coffee shop, and which ones made them really uncomfortable to try alone. What did they say?
Yeah, well, I should say the study was conducted by Rebecca Ratner at the University of Maryland's Business School and Rebecca Hamilton at Georgetown Business School. And basically, they polled a lot of people asking them, you know, under what conditions would you be comfortable doing X or Y alone? What would maybe make you more comfortable? And what they basically found was that a lot of people express the same sorts of fears I have, which is that if they do stuff alone, people will think they're losers, basically. But interestingly, when they asked them to imagine situations where they were basically had a reason to be somewhere, where they were in a coffee shop or a restaurant with a newspaper or a magazine, that newspaper or magazine had almost magical properties. Like, suddenly they were fine being there alone because they seemed to have a reason to be there.
I laugh because that's so exactly my rule. If I'm at a coffee shop or a restaurant alone, I have to have that reading material, A, to not get bored, I guess, because I'm not talking to anybody, but B, because it just doesn't look right if you don't have that prop there. It's like, oh, he's doing something.
Right, and these days you can also do the thing where you pull out your phone and pretend to read it, so it looks like you've got something to do.
See, I have friends. They're texting me, and I'm looking at their texts.
Exactly.
That's how social I am.
Right.
You guys may not read women's magazines, but over the years, this has been an article that's been talked about a lot, about how you should make yourself go to the restaurant and sit alone with no magazine, with no book to read, with no phone, and you just sit there, and it's really supposed to really build your courage and self-esteem. But there is something sort of taboo about not having that prop.
There is. I also think there's a really interesting gender component I didn't entirely go into in the article, because in a lot of settings, like a coffee shop or a restaurant, I think if you're a woman and you go alone, just because of how our culture works, it's more likely someone will approach you and chat you up. And I think the sorts of fears and neuroses we develop over this are pretty different for men than they are for women as a result.
Talking to Jesse Single. He's the editor of the Science of Us blog at New York Magazine. We're talking about doing stuff alone, going to the movie, going to a party, going to a restaurant, taking yourself out and overcoming the reluctance that many people feel. And in Jesse, in this research you looked at, they also tried an experiment to bump people out of their comfort zone a little bit. What did they do? How did it work?
Yeah, that's what was particularly cool about this, is they didn't just rely on surveys. They had a field experiment where they approached people in a campus center. They approached both people who were alone and in a group, and they asked them if they wanted to go check out a nearby art exhibit for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. And what they found was that the people who were alone both expected to have less fun and were just less excited about going. But when they then pulled them afterwards and said, how much did you enjoy it, that there was no difference between how much fun people went alone or in a group. So, you know, it's one experiment in one setting, but it does suggest that if you can just get over the hump of your fear about being seen out alone, you know, you might actually have some fun experiences.
Other than missing out on what could be a pretty fun experience because you were afraid to go, why should we care as a society if people want to stay home or go out in groups? What does it matter?
Yeah, the authors do a really good job of putting this in a broader cultural context. I think a lot of people are familiar with the book Bowling Alone, which basically says that over the last several decades, Americans have gotten lonelier in certain senses. We don't belong to civic organizations as much as we used to. We don't talk to our neighbors. So they see their paper as important in the sense that this is the reality we're faced with. And the other thing is that if you go out and do stuff alone, that's a great way to actually meet people. So there's sort of a vicious cycle here where maybe you don't have a lot of people to hang out with. And then if you refuse to do stuff alone, that's just going to exacerbate that because you won't meet anybody.
Yeah, it does seem like trying to do things with grown-up friends and trying to merge a schedule together, it's like, you know, the logistical challenge of the moon landing, trying to make it happen. So if we're not willing to do cool stuff alone, we may just not do it at all.
Yeah, and I also should say that, like, I'm 31, and when you reach, I think, your late 20s or early 30s, it does get a little bit harder to have those spontaneous gatherings where, you know, everyone's going to get together to go to a bar or go to dinner. So I think as you grow up a little bit, this is a skill that could prove increasingly useful.
One interesting component of all of this is that it doesn't sound like it's, you know, fear of not having fun because you're sitting there alone. We're just so hung up on what people think about us that that's the main hang up.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, this is something that comes up over and over in psychology, which is that whatever our internal beliefs, whether or not I think I'd have fun seeing a movie, we are so influenced by the people around us, not just what they're doing and thinking, but what we think they're doing and thinking. And there's this concept of pluralistic ignorance where everyone thinks that this is, you know, people around them hold certain norms and beliefs, but they don't. So it may actually prove to be false that if you go to a movie, people will think you don't have any friends. And that's actually a study they want to do. They want to see whether those fears are justified.
And the research didn't get into that justified side. But if I think about it personally, when I'm out and about with people or not, I'm not looking around the restaurant or the movie theater. What's that guy doing here alone?
Like,
I think probably not. Most people are not judging the singletons at these outings.
Yeah, there's almost sort of a degree of egomania to it, because like the idea that anyone in a crowded theater is going to be that worried about me or why I'm there alone is just, I think it's not very realistic.
Do you think there is something to it, though? I mean, I guess I'll come clean here. I have seen people out alone, people that I know, and I might be driving by, and I'll think, huh, I wonder how come...
You do?
I have. I'm a bad person.
You're the problem.
All my fears are confirmed. You're judging me.
I'm not saying I'm judgmental. I'm saying I notice.
You notice.
So I might say, there is X. They
are Rob, let's say.
Let's say Rob. He's a lovely person. I wonder why he's alone at this party, you know, or at this coffee shop on a Friday night. And I would think that, but I wouldn't attach
judge
any value.
No, I shouldn't have separated myself from that completely. I think, like everyone else, I make sort of quick, sometimes mean judgments about people. But I guess maybe the takeaway lesson is, even if these people you don't know are judging you, why should you let that get in the way of having a good time or seeing a movie you want to see?
So has writing about this, Jesse, and looking at this research changed your life, changed the way you approach doing stuff alone?
This is where I'm supposed to tell some story about how reporting the article just fundamentally changed who I am as a person. It has not at all. I'm trying to make myself see Ex Machina, this really cool-looking sci-fi movie, alone sometime in the next couple weeks, but I keep coming up with excuses not to.
Well, let's find out about that. Why do you care about going to a movie alone? To me, that seems like one of the easiest things to do alone, because it's dark. People
right.
can't say, hey, there's Jesse single alone at the movies. They're just watching the movie.
Right. No, I mean, I'm just a shapeless blob in a dark movie theater. You're right. It's totally rational. I don't think we think through these fears carefully. I think they just sort of emerge for whatever reason. And at the same time, I'm happy going to a coffee shop alone where people can see me. So, yeah, I don't make very much sense as a person, I think, is what we're realizing.
All right, Jesse, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Jesse Singel. He's editor of the Science of Us blog for New York Magazine, talking about the latest research on why people choose or choose not to go places by themselves.
And now it's your turn to weigh in on this at 800-642-1234. Are you somebody who is intimidated by going to the movies or a concert or out to eat by yourself? What is it that keeps you from doing these things alone? Or are you someone who's embraced the art of flying solo? And what are the things about it that you enjoy that you wouldn't give up? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking about doing things alone, things like going to the movies, to a concert, to a restaurant. While lots of us are reluctant to do these things by ourselves, new research says that we may be missing out on something significant.
We want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. Do you shy away from solo activities? Are there outings you like doing with a friend but you'd never do by yourself? Or are you someone who enjoys going out by yourself? What about it appeals to you? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to our callers. Jacqueline is on the line in Sturgeon Bay. Jacqueline, hi. Jacqueline, are you there? No, Jacqueline? Okay, let's move on to Jim with us in Tomahawk then. Jim, hello, you're on the air.
Hi, I just want to say I love going to the movies alone. My wife talks to me during a movie, like, pretty much nonstop. And then the reasons have changed over the years, but the second one is, it's just alone time. I have children, and a lot of times I don't get that time alone. And so it's just that time for me. And I'm really comfortable walking into a movie theater with, you know, a full, and it's just me.
So, Jim, you never, as we were just talking about, some people feel like, oh, people are noticing that they're alone, maybe judging them. That's not crossing your mind at all at the movies.
No, that has never crossed my mind.
All right. What's the last movie you saw by yourself, Jim?
I think it was Fury.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Jim, for sharing your experience. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you do stuff alone? Why or why not?
All right. We're going to go next to Diane joining us in Eau Claire. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I enjoy doing things by myself because I'm a caregiver and I really need that time alone, that me time to kind of refresh and regenerate myself.
So is it nice for you to be among people, say at a coffee shop or restaurant, but still be by yourself? Or do you like to be fully alone, maybe on a walk in the woods or something?
I can go to a coffee shop or a restaurant or even a movie. I can do those things by myself. I'm comfortable with doing that.
All right. Gives you time to recharge. Well, thank you so much for sharing your opinion. Thanks.
Well, you know, as an introvert, I do feel like I need that alone time to recharge, but it doesn't feel like it counts for me if I'm in a big room full of people watching a movie or whatever. So that's interesting. But our first couple callers say, hey, it's me time. We'll go next to Jacqueline now is back in Sturgeon Bay. Jacqueline, hi.
Hi. I finally got through to you.
Yes. So do you do stuff alone?
I do. I do lots of stuff alone, but I'd rather actually have somebody to share the experience with. But after many, many years of missing out on so many things that I wanted to do or see because somebody else couldn't make their schedule work to me, I decided the heck with it, and I'm going by myself.
All right, so it's more fun, Jacqueline, if you've got somebody to talk to about it, you're saying, but failing that, it's fine to do it on your own.
Right.
All right, Jacqueline, thank you so much for calling in. You can join in at 800-642-1234, talking about going out and doing things alone, whether you like it or not.
Couple comments here. Joe on Facebook says, I used to hate going out alone. Now I quite enjoy it. Roxanne in Madison says, when I'm meeting a friend and they're running late, I always feel a sense of panic and I feel like everyone is watching me and judging me. It's ridiculous. But at least we'll say this for Roxanne. She says it's ridiculous. She's aware this is something maybe she'd like to change.
Right. And we heard from Jeff on Facebook who says, I went to a midweek daytime matinee of a movie. Ended up being the only person for the show. It was great. My own personal viewing, no talking, no rustling of food containers, no quick glances at the cell phone. Jeff, thanks a lot for that comment. Yeah, I used to work at early shift. You could get a whole theater by yourself at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
That is always a treat.
That was pretty sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll go back to the phones now. Pete is joining us in Madison. Hi, Pete.
Hi.
What is your experience with this?
Well, I think we should get over our self-consciousness about going out by ourselves. You know, thinking that you're being watched because you're by yourself. And, you know, most people, other people are so self-conscious that they're not noticing you in the first place.
That's probably true. A good rule of thumb. Thanks, Pete.
Yeah, thanks. Interesting. We go next to Jordan on the line in Green Bay. Jordan, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your story?
Well, you know, I actually travel a lot by myself. I've traveled, I've hitchhiked around the United States by myself. I've hitchhiked around Europe by myself. And I find that I have like literally thousands of friends like all over the country, all over Europe, just because I decided to do it myself. I don't know anybody who would just be able to get up and go and do something. You know, I'll go to movies or do anything by myself, and I like people, but no matter where I end up going, I always end up finding people that end up giving you reasons to return.
Interesting, Jordan. Thanks a lot. And that was actually in the research that we were talking about earlier. There was some talk about some people might be more willing to do things on their own while traveling than they would while at home. I'll do that. Like if I'm in a city, my friends there aren't available. Yeah, and I'll check out things. I'm happy to do stuff by myself there that I wouldn't do here at home.
I think I got to try that. Jordan said he has thousands of friends, from doing that.
I'm surly enough, I wouldn't make that many friends in any circumstance.
Yeah. Maybe the low dozens?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, thanks for that call, Jordan. We're going to go to Emily in Clintonville. Emily, hi.
Yes, hello. I am the type of person who identifies as somebody who gets nervous going out alone. And even in that fact, I get nervous calling into the radio. But I've learned to kind of get past this, partially due to like work trips, traveling on my own. And I've learned really that you have to find a purpose in why you're going out. You can't just constantly worry about yourself, oh, who's looking at me? What do they think? But instead kind of redirect your focus and find, you know, if I'm going and getting coffee, maybe bring my computer, or just like being there and enjoying your coffee, or like going to a bar and having a drink, or for the movie, just being involved kind of in the movie.
And how would you say your life has changed now that you have learned to do all that stuff alone?
Well, it's kind of a shift in the thought process, kind of just really getting over what other people think of you, but by replacing that thought with something else, you know, what am I doing here? What would I like to be? Or, you know, you go to a place with a group of friends and, you know, you kind of get into your pattern. And by going out alone, you know, maybe sometimes if you're in the mall, you go to a different store than normal. I think it kind of opens up your experience.
Great point. Well, thank you for that, Emily. And a couple of callers suggesting that being alone opens you up to a lot more potential to experience new things. Jordan kind of saying the same thing there, too.
We'll go now to Deborah with us in Brown Deer. Deborah, hi.
You guys are going to have to start a Central Time Singles Club for those alone. But, you know, I think everybody's saying, you know, once you get over wondering what people are thinking about you, well, I think once you figure out that everyone's as crazy as you, it's really irrelevant. I mean, I couldn't wait to leave my hometown in the UP and just take off, and that's what I did. And I sailed to England with three guys I didn't know, and it wasn't all pleasure because two of them were from France, and one was the son of a doctor in Massachusetts. But we delivered the boat. It's you can't do everything. You can't always be surrounded by people, and I know so many people from my travels, but I fiercely guard my independence. I'm about to go out and go into the woods here
in a nearby park.
All right. Well, enjoy the woods today, Deborah. Thanks so much. Deborah appreciates her independence, always willing to do stuff, even adventures, it sounds like, on her own.
Thanks for that call. On to Larry we go. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Yeah, I work with a lot of people, and I have lots of friends, but I really like doing things alone. Two of my favorite hobbies are fishing and woodworking. And fishing, I like to go alone. If I decide to move, change spots, or whatever I want to do, I do it at my leisure. And woodworking kind of lends itself to working alone, but like I say, at work, I'm surrounded by people all day, so it just kind of gives me a break.
Great. Well, thank you for that, Larry, and that's a good point, that the hobby can be the stand-in for the friend. I like to write, and generally you write alone, but you don't feel lonely because you're occupied with something you love.
Well, I got to say, fishing, I see somebody fishing alone. That's, you're never going to get a negative judgment on that. I kind of admire that kind of solitary experience, just you and the water. I mean, not that I do it. But that's something that it seems normal, really, to go fishing alone. Well, you can keep, thank you so much for all your calls and your comments. You can keep sharing your thoughts about whether you do stuff on your own over at the Central Time Facebook page. Love to hear, read more of your stories. Tell us what you do or don't do on your own. What's the line? What is it that you would feel weird about heading out to on your own? Well, it's very much the off season for NFL football players right now, which meant that a key member of the Green Bay Packers had time to appear on Celebrity Jeopardy, an episode aired last night.
And here's the even more amazing news. He won, taking home $50,000 for the charity Midwest Athletes Against Childhood Cancer. And while he did well through the show, he did miss a Wisconsin-themed Final Jeopardy question about motorcycle inventors Harley and Davidson.
He did get Alex Trebek to do his buckling the championship belt or the discount double check, as you see in the commercials. Now, here's a clip. This wasn't from the show itself. This is a clip of Rogers talking about his approach to the game of Jeopardy.
You know, I knew the rules and had studied up a lot about the reaction time and when to buzz in, and read about different players and their strategies, whether you go down a category or whether you jump around. And
so I think I would be like hitting the books and going on the internet to get knowledge. No, this guy's a football player. He's like breaking down the mechanics of the game.
Wait, did he just say he studied when to jump around?
Yeah, you know, like from category to category.
Oh, okay.
Or you jump from 100 to 400.
I thought he meant,
I guess,
like,
that annoys some people.
Cheering like a fan jumping
jump
around.
No, I don't think so. Not quite that literal.
Oh, well.
All right, so Aaron Rodgers winning at Celebrity Jeopardy. We'll go out with the theme to Jeopardy. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.